Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and go to Syria to speak with Amnesty International's lead crisis researcher, Donatella Rivera, who is behind the lines in the war zone, completing her seventh Human Rights Observer mission inside Syria, where she has documented atrocities, death and destruction. We will discuss the callous targeting of civilian areas and the growing refugee crisis. Then, as one of the wonders of the ancient world, the souk in Aleppo burns, we will speak with Robert Baer, a veteran CIA officer who served in Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon, and has correctly predicted the course of the Syrian civil war since its beginning in March of 2011. We will discuss the increasingly long and bloody surrogate war between Iran and Saudi Arabia and its growing toll on lives, property, and irreplaceable sites of historic heritage. Then finally, we will speak with Mark Perry, who has an article at Foreign Policy, The Entebbe Option, How the U.S. Thinks Israel Might Strike Iran. Following Prime Minister Netanyahu's ultimatum at the UN that Iran will cross his red line in the spring, we will discuss the three possible options of 1. An Israeli commando raid on Iranian nuclear facilities, 2. A massive bombing campaign, and 3. A decapitation strike against Iranian leadership and its military and intelligence Praetorian Guard. Joining us now from Syria is Amnesty International's lead crisis researcher, Donatella Rivera, who monitors human rights crises in the world's hotspots, one of the very few journalists or human rights monitors who have been on the ground in Syria in recent months. She goes where few are able or willing to venture. In the last year alone, she's led Amnesty's research missions in Libya, where she was under fire in Misrata, South Sudan's Nuba Mountains, and now in Syria, where she is just completing her seventh Human Rights Observer mission inside Syria, documenting atrocities committed by the Syrian government against its own people. Welcome to Background Briefing, Donatella Rivera.
Hello.
So, Donatella, you're on your way out of Syria, right, heading to the Turkish border, and this is your...
I'm in Syria. I'm just, at the moment, I'm just in Nara, which is relatively near to the Turkish border. I'm in Syria.
Right, and that's why we can talk to you, which we're grateful for. Of course, one of the great tragedies, which we'll be talking about in a little while, is the burning of the souk in Aleppo, which is not a World Heritage Site, but is an extraordinary historic treasure. It doesn't compare to the human suffering, but it makes one realize how deep and ongoing this tragedy is. You've been there in and out of that country behind the lines now on your seventh trip. Do you see any hope, or do you see it just deteriorating?
Hello?
Yeah, do you see things deteriorating? Is that what's happening? It's getting worse?
Very much so. The situation has deteriorated so dramatically over the last 2 months since the Syrian government forces have started to use aircraft and artillery on a daily basis. Basically, since the government forces have been pushed out or have left a large part of the territories, they have resorted to bombing from the air with both aircraft and helicopters and shelling with artillery from a distance. The overwhelming majority of the victims of these attacks are civilian. Just the day before yesterday in the morning, I got to a house which has just been bombed. 7 civilian, 1 elderly man, and the rest, women and children, were killed. And 1 small child, age 3, is now in the hospital fighting for his life. And this is just, you know, this is just the case, one of so many. Not a day goes past without several civilians being killed either in airstrikes or in artillery attacks.
So, Donatella, these people can't get out of the war zone. Is that the reason why they're obviously non-combatants? But with the Syrian government bombing indiscriminately areas where the Free Syrian Army are fighting their troops, is there any way for these people to get out?
The problem is that these people are not really technically in a war zone. These are areas where the combat ended in 2 months ago, where there is no combat anymore. What there is just the bombardment from the air and shelling from afar by government forces. It's as if the Syrian government is wanting to punish collectively the population in the areas which have now come under the control of the armed opposition. There is no safe areas anymore. Hundreds of thousands of people have fled. Obviously, not everybody can leave the country. And for those who remain, there is nowhere safe. A few days ago, I was in the area of Jabal al-Zawiya, which is north of the town of Hama. It's a mountain area, and there are caves. And literally, the population of the villages there spend their entire days in the caves because it's during the day there that there are most frequent bombings. So that's what I saw families doing, just going to the caves early in the morning and staying there all night and then going back home to sleep. Short of the entire population of the country leaving, which is not a realistic proposition because this is a country of 23 million people, there is really nowhere safe anymore for ordinary civilians.
So if the Syrian government is conducting a terror campaign of vengeance and retribution against areas liberated by the Free Syrian Army, and the battles are going on, as we mentioned, in Aleppo, where the ancient souk is burning, and there have been battles inside of Damascus, is there any indication of where the Syrian government will draw the line? Are they prepared to destroy all of these ancient cities?
It's very difficult to know where things are going other than in what seems to be a very bad direction, because the situation has worsened steadily since the beginning of the uprising. You know, it began with peaceful demonstrations, and for months we saw peaceful demonstrators being shot with live bullets. And then, you know, there was the period of the incursions by the army, and now it's the bombing and shelling from afar, and now it's by far worse than it was a few months ago, because really there is nothing that anybody can do to protect themselves from bombs being dropped from the air or artillery shells being lobbed from 15 kilometers away. At the moment, there seems to be, on the one hand, the Syrian government shows no intention of changing course. I mean, if anything, from what we've seen in the past 2 months, they have increased the attacks, which are indiscriminate because they are using imprecise weapons which are meant for the battlefield and which should never be used in civilian residential areas, but which are used in residential areas, with disastrous consequences for the civilian population. And on the other hand, we see an international community which is completely paralyzed. There has been no effective pressure exerted on the Syrian government to put a stop to the attacks which cause particular harm to the civilians. Because, as you know, at the level of the UN Security Council, there is a division. And that division has prevented any effective pressure being put. So, unless there is some dramatic change at the level of the international community, the situation looks set to continue to deteriorate even further than it has so far.
Again, I'm speaking with Amnesty International's lead crisis researcher, Donatella Rivera, who is inside the Syrian war zone on her seventh Human Rights Observer mission, documenting atrocities committed by the Syrian government against its own people. Now, what about atrocities committed by the Free Syrian Army? Obviously, this is a bloody civil war. Have you been able to document any atrocities committed by the Free Syrian Army?
There are also human rights abuses being committed by various armed opposition groups. Not all of them are part of the Free Syrian Army. There are many different groups, some of which belong to the Free Syrian Army and other not. The most well-known abuses are those that are committed against soldiers or militia members who are captured by these armed opposition groups and who are often beaten up, in some cases tortured, and in some cases executed. Of course, the same abuses are also continued to be committed by government forces, which have engaged in torture for even long before the beginning of the uprising, but it certainly has become systematic since the uprisings began, and extrajudicial execution also frequently committed by government forces, targeting not only combatants but also peaceful activists. So we have a specific kind of abuses against those who are detained by both sides, ill treatment, torture, and in some cases summary execution, unlawful killings, which are committed by both government forces and armed opposition groups. And then we have the, attacks against the civilian population, which make up by far the largest number of victims. We have not received any information of attacks against civilian, against the civilian population being committed by the armed opposition for now.
So is the Shabia militia on the part of the government, this group that have been you documented earlier when I spoke with you the last time, where they were going through villages and massacring people, innocent civilians, are they still a big part of the mix? Because it seems pretty clear that this has become a sectarian war between the Sunni majority and the Alawite minority, and who it appears the Christian minority also support.
I would be reluctant to use the term civil war, simply because what we are seeing is people being targeted because they are known or perceived or seen as supporting the opposite side. That is the principal reason why people are being targeted. Among the Shabiha militias, there are many Sunni, for example. We've seen some cases where there are allegations that those who committed massacres, such as Hula or some of the other areas, included alongside government forces, militias, pro-government militias from Alawi villages. But those have been, on the whole, isolated cases. In the vast majority of people who've been killed are civilians who have been killed by government forces because they are believed to be supportive of the opposition. And then we see the fight between the both armed sides. Again, it's because of where they stand politically. There are many soldiers and some militia members, pro-government militia members, who are from the Sunni majority. And they are fighting along government on the government side. So, it could be that if the situation continues to deteriorate, that the sectarian element will become increasingly prominent. But until now, I would be very reluctant to use the term civil war, because that's not really what we've seen on the ground. There's certainly been incident of sectarian violence, but for the most part, it's a government which is absolutely bent on suppressing the opposition.
So how would you then describe this division? If it's not a civil war and it's not the Alawites versus the Sunni, what is it?
It's a situation which is not unlike what we've seen in other countries, where part of the population initially peacefully and then by taking up arms rebelled against a government which had a very well established proven record of repression and oppression for many years, and so when part of the population rose up against these practices and demanded change, first peacefully and for many months peacefully, the response of the security forces and armed forces was blind repression. And then, you know, the rest has continued from that.
So it's really about the Assad's family's attitude, in a sense, that they believe it's their divine right to rule this country. They have for the last 50 years, and they simply won't give up power and they won't compromise. That seems to be the situation. But hasn't it become a surrogate war, Donatella Rivera, between Iran and Saudi Arabia in terms of who's supplying arms on both sides?
I think that again we have to work with fact more than with speculation, and both the Syrian government and the Syrian opposition have been trading accusation, each side accusing the other of being, if you will, the puppet of a foreign power, of using foreign fighters, of receiving weapons from abroad. And I mean, all that is there. I mean, there are foreign fighters on both sides, it seems, but they are a tiny, tiny, tiny minority. The weapons that are being used, most of the weapons that I've seen being used are old Soviet era weapons, whether they are missiles or bombs or artillery shells being used by government forces. They're mostly originating from the former Soviet Union, and they're mostly from the 70s, early 80s. Some of them could possibly be from the late 60s. Material that was received a long time ago. As for the opposition, they have until now been fighting mostly with light weapons, and mostly with weapons that they have either bought, especially earlier on, from corrupted army officials and soldiers, and now, more recently, weapons that they have seized from government positions that they have managed to overrun. They have also acquired weapons that have come from outside via Turkey on in the north and via Lebanon from the south. But again, the percentage of the weapons that have come from outside being used on the ground seem to be, for now, still a minority insofar as the opposition is concerned. I mean, on the ground, you know, what we see are still most fighters using Kalashnikovs and some of the heavier machine guns that they have recently seized from government forces. So there hasn't been a very large influx of weapons for now. I mean, there is certainly, you know, each side has its own supporters. But for now, it remains a conflict on the ground, which is fought between government forces and opposition forces, both of which are Syrians in the overwhelming majority.
Well, Donatella Rivera, I thank you so much for joining us here today, and the fact that you're inside Syria in the war zone, and the Syrian government is indiscriminately shelling and bombing areas liberated by the Free Syrian Army where you are. I just hope you keep your head down.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Again, I've been speaking with Amnesty International's lead crisis researcher, Donatella Rivera, who monitors human rights crises in the world's hotspots, one of the very few journalists or human rights monitors who have been on the ground in Syria in recent months. She goes where few are able or willing to venture. In the last year alone, she's led Amnesty's research missions in Libya, where she was under fire in Misrata, South Sudan's Nuba Mountains, and now Syria, where she is on her seventh Human Rights Observer mission inside Syria, documenting atrocities committed by the Syrian government against its own people. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with a CIA veteran who served in Syria and who has correctly predicted events since the uprising began in March of 2011.